Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another recording of one of our famous episodes. Today we are recording episode 134, and I am honored and I have the distinct pleasure to have my good friend and colleague in a variety of ways. We've been talking now for many years, Suki Dhillon Alberga. And Suki and I, we go back a ways, and we'll get to know Suki in a second. But one of the most amazing thing about this lady that I'm going to be talking to today is her ability to invent things and bring them from nothing to fruition, to bring them out to the market. So today we're going to be talking about an invention or a software that Suki has created, and her fortitude and her foresight into the future has helped her create this in the legal industry. Suki, welcome to the program. Welcome to the channel. Good to see you again. Hopefully you're not freezing at minus 14 temperature in Ontario today.
Thank you, Robin, for the opportunity to speak on your podcast. It's such a thrill to see the success that you've been getting and the interesting and impressive guest speakers that you've had. And just, it's an honor to be part of the list of that list. So thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thanks for making the time. I really appreciate it. I always wanted to talk to you a little bit. We've talked about it in several cases about Counselor Docs and what you've done in the legal sector. Before we get into that, let's get to know you a little bit. For those who don't know you on the channel, and there are many listeners to this podcast, and I like to mention this because I love it, and I am so happy about it, so thrilled about it. And now we have listeners from 49 different countries, and people from around the world are listening to this channel. I'm so blessed with that. I really appreciate everybody who's come along and for the journey here for 2 years on this channel, and given us the airtime for them to listen, to help us spread the word and help us promote those individuals. Otherwise, will not have had the opportunity to be promoted, to be honest with you. Most of our guests, they come on this channel promoting ideas, promoting issues that needs to be resolved, promoting products and services, why not? And that's what we're going to be talking about today. Two things. We want to get to know you, and we also want to get to know the product and services that you offer. Suki, let's start with you. Tell us your story. And if you were like, you know, instead of formulating this in a storytelling, let me ask you this question in a different way. If you were at a bar, and not that you would go to a bar, maybe you do, I don't know, but you were at a restaurant and somebody's sitting beside you says, so what do you do? And, how do you explain to yourself what you do, at least from that perspective, you know, in a very casual environment at a bar or at a restaurant or a movie theater, et cetera?
Okay. That's an interesting way of putting it. So I guess I would say is I help other people. I help advocate for other people. I help start up businesses and existing businesses realize their dreams and to do it in a way where they don't have to worry at night about liability and risk of liability. So I try and do it in the most innovative ways of serving the public in that way. I guess that's kind of in a nutshell what I do. Yeah, I guess that's what I would say.
So Suki, you know, put together a company, a law firm called Bridging Legal Solutions, correct?
Yes.
And Bridging Legal Solutions is a company that helps corporate and startups and small to medium sized companies, in my interpretation, my humble interpretation, for the law system, for the legal system, not to look so scary for the people on the outside. So you help them walk through the legal process without feeling they're going to faint or something. So why did you care so much about that?
Well, I guess I'll just tell you with how my journey started. Because I'm also involved with the Canadian Bar Association Legal Futures Subcommittee, I'm now their chair. During COVID, there was a lot of conversation because all of a sudden our legal industry was sort of somewhat shut down. Like so many other industries out there, including, you know, localization as well and things, where people were now all of a sudden forced to remotely communicate and work. And that was really foreign for our legal industry. We hadn't had much innovation in over 30 years, especially in Canada. And now all of a sudden it's like, okay, you've got Legal Zoom, you've got all these Law Depot and all these other different tech companies coming into our space and saying, hey, there's an opportunity here, but not quite understanding to the depth. I think that they should have understood what we do and how we do and educate the public in a correct way. The dialogue started to become more like, oh, all lawyers do is push templates, charge a lot of money, and AI is going to replace them. And so that really rubbed me the wrong way, because it was like, hey, first of all, I started the first multidisciplinary practice in Canada in business law and health law to essentially help businesses who have new innovative ideas or who have medical devices or things like that that they're doing that's outside of the box and not necessarily easy to kind of figure out the compliances. There were regulatory compliances as well. So it was sort of like, okay, so what can we do to kind of help facilitate that? Because, you know, when you're starting a business, not only are you concerned about the legal consequences, but also tax implications. So how do we help people service them in a way that, you know, there's a team that's working together, that's collaborative to serve them? So the multidiscipline practice idea came up, where we provide not only legal advice, HR services, but also accounting services to help, you know, businesses to navigate those complexities, you know, together. And so when I was kind of in that space, I thought, well, that's really negative messaging that's going out to clients. And when I deal with my clients and I explain a contract to them and say, for example, if they were doing, which I did, I started out with a shareholders agreement, and when I explained what the platform's all about, but that's a really complex agreement. It involves succession planning, tax implications, legal liability. There's so much involved and complexities involved in that. And clients would always say, okay, well, Suki, you did the contract. That's all I need to know. I was like, no. You need to understand what the terms and the clauses mean, because it's going to affect your everyday decision making and where you want to take your business at the next level. Especially those who are like trying to exit after they've started their startup, like how the growth is going to happen. So those documents and understanding them and being educated about them are important. And so that's where I felt there was a gap. And so I thought, okay, how do I fill this gap? How do I help with access to justice? Because being part of the CBA, like yourself, I was doing a lot of podcasts and being a host and moderating these discussions for the modernization of the justice system. And our legal industry with experts from cybersecurity, privacy data, technology, like professors from Ottawa University, things like that, and also tech companies as well. So I was really involved in the conversation and really getting a pulse of what was happening. And so I felt like education was a missing gap there. So I reached out to a good friend of mine in the States, who is in the tech world and also was a lawyer. And I said to him, listen, I have an idea. I want to build something, but I don't know where to start. And he kind of looked at me and he was like, okay, you know, go to Python and all these different types of platforms and go do it. And I think he was kind of sort of entertaining me, so to speak, right? And so when I went in and started looking into a platform that would work for me, I found one. And then when I decided to really get into it and start building, I realized it wouldn't do what I wanted it to do. So I had to manipulate it. Well, how do I do that? Well, then I had to learn encoding. So I found myself learning encoding as well while running a practice, having twins, being single mother at the time. And it was like long hours, late nights, but you know what? It was just a drive inside of me that I'm onto something. I can do this. When I finished and completed what I did and I showed my friend, instantly he said to me, you need to get into a sandbox in Canada. He said, do they have any sandboxes? I said, well, I know they have one in BC, but I think they're starting one in Ontario. So I was the first lawyer applicant for the Law Society of Ontario's Access to Innovation Sandbox. And because I was a lawyer, they were scratching their heads going, okay, wait a second. We thought tech companies were going to come to us. We didn't think a lawyer would come up and build a platform to provide legal services. And I said to them, well, here I am. How do we collaborate? How do we do this together? How do we innovate in our own industry? Let's innovate internally. Let's use us lawyers, motivate us. Let's work together to collaborate to do this. So it was a long journey with them. And I think there was a lot of vetting process that had to happen, which was great because I took it as more as, you know what, you're helping me create a quality product that's going to go out there to the public. And that's important. They had an advisory board made up of 13 experts. That actually went through Councillor Dox's processes and everything and gave us stage 1 approval and stage 2 approval. Stage 1 approval right out of the gate, they said to me, Suki, not only is this great for access to justice for those who can't necessarily always afford those expensive sometime agreements, like when you're starting out, especially a startup, to get like a shareholder agreement, it can cost you like $2,500 to even $10,000, depending on which law firm is doing it for you and the complexity of your company. Here was increasing justice for less cost and efficiency and understanding and education. So last night he was quite thrilled about that. But then they also said to me, you can scale this. And I thought, well, how do I scale it? And then that aha moment came where it was like, oh, I can not only help existing senior lawyers to do things efficiently, but also train junior lawyers in critical thinking that you usually get over time of practice and experience, but, you know, sort of give them that from that transition from law school into the practice of law, and to be able to still create enforceable, binding contracts. So I think that was Counselor Doc's journey. And then it was like, okay, well, I think I need to create a separate company for this. So I found myself in the startup world myself. And it's been quite the journey. Clients not only relate to me now because they understand that even when I do give them legal advice, I understand the entrepreneurial journey and the growing pains that go along with it, because I'm walking the walk myself now. So it's been quite the journey.
Absolutely, Suki. Great. Thanks for the description and how you started. Always starting a new business is not an easy task, even though if you have like experience, you've done somewhat of that nature in the corporate world. Like in my case, for instance, moving out of the corporate world to the, starting your own thing, entrepreneurship kind of a role. I'm seeing that now. My earlier call this morning was taxation and setting this up. You know, I exactly know what you're going through with this. And a lot of people out there who are in the same boat are asking the same questions. And to a large extent, to be honest with you, and people probably know or don't know, I don't know, but some people probably have their companies set up wrong.
Yes.
And they probably never bothered to check it out and talk to somebody with experience to set it up correctly.
Yeah,
so it's just part of the whole counselor doc, Suki. If you were to think about it from a point of, okay, I've done it now, but when you were going to school, when you were in university, you're sitting by yourself and you're saying, you know, if I look back at that individual years ago when I was going to school and I look at the individual that it is today, do you think the individual in school that was at university back then will sort of have an idea of this individual now? You anticipated this? Is this was supposed to happen this way? Or the other individual will be shocked for where you are right now? Where you are right now?
Totally shocked. Totally like, what? No way. Never. You know, I was the one in the family that, you know how when you had the multiple remote controls and you had to turn on the TV and the satellite, and I didn't even know which remote did what, and I couldn't turn the darn thing on. That was me. And to see me do this, like, it is an outer body experience going, huh? Like even learning coding and stuff. Like I remember being up one night, and it was like, I think I was up 72 hours because the motivation was there. I really wanted to put something out there. And I don't know, when you get that drive or that inner gut feeling that you're onto something, you got to do it. That net nudge, it just eats at you until you do it and get it. Like, it just eats at you. Sometimes I think there's some entrepreneurs out there that have had that feeling. And I can relate to them as well, because you can't let it go. You just got to do it. And it was that feeling that I had. And looking back, I think to myself, did I really do this? I did? Okay. But like, I see the value in it. And the great thing is that I think as an entrepreneur, if I could give any tidbit or some golden nugget for your audience members who might be thinking of becoming an entrepreneur or are they in that early journey right now, is to say, try and not be the smartest person at the table. Always put yourself with other experts. Be humble enough to hear what they have to say. Be a sponge. Absorb whatever information they can give you, advice. I think I've been like that. And because of that, I think it encouraged me to keep going and the next steps to take. And I feel too that I have been being in the right place at the right time and being at the right tables, that I have been able to speak to industry leaders and talk to them about my platform and get their insights. And I say this humbly, I mean, I'm just floored at times, where they kind of say to me, Suki, you're on the right track. You know, this is something that our industry definitely needs, even in the storm of generative AI. I mean, we'll get into more what my platform does and what generative AI is versus AI rule-based, or what, you know, I've been told by, you know, these leading industry experts saying that your lane is more assurance AI kind of, you know, phrase to speak. So I think it's really important to be like that, to be open to learn and constantly learn and know that you don't know it all. And it's okay that you don't know it all. And it's okay to make a mistake. It's okay to pivot, because when you create that space, you're creating something that can be sustainable and that can grow on a steady space and level. So yeah, that would be the advice that I would give to your listeners.
Great. Well, thanks for that, Suki. Appreciate it. Now let's get to know a little bit about Counselor Docs, which the topic of the hour, and that's why we wanted to chat today. For the audience, Counselor Docs is an online document automation and training platform, not just templates, approved by the Law Society of Ontario to Innovation Program, which gives the credibility for the software. It gives the stamp of approval, if you will. Built on a platform called Gavel, so automated workflow, questionnaires, logic behind the scenes, and the types of agreements that are currently available. I say currently because these types of agreements can be expanded, could be added to. Shareholder agreements, NDAs, employment contracts, term sheets, and more in the development pipeline. So in a simple term, and hopefully I didn't steal your thunder by this introduction, Suki. Hopefully I did it justice. We've talked about Counselor Docs for a bit, so I know a little bit about it. In a simple language, what is Counselor Docs and who is it for?
It's interesting. Counselor Docs is to help a user. I'll start with the user and then I'll tell you who's it for, because it kind of branched out into areas that I didn't even think or imagine it could be beneficial for. But it is for a user that is wanting to understand complex legal agreements and terms and contracts, and wants to make sure that the agreement that they have is enforceable at the end of the day. Take away up the noise and the confusion, because we all know that if you go on Google or you go on generative AI, the information that's on there, sure, it's AI is data collecting, can present it to you. I like to say it's similar to an eager articling student that comes to you and presents you the information and says, here you go. And it presents it very authoritatively, like, I'm right, and here you go, you know. And that's where, you know, a senior lawyer who has experience and understands the complexities of law and different issues over time would say, wait a second, hold on. There's something you need to look at here. You need to look at this. This isn't correct. Or this may work in this scenario, but not in this scenario. AI, generative AI, cannot do that. Counselor Docs, I built it in such a way because, again, I built it wearing a hat like I was an articling student, I was a senior lawyer, and I'm the client. So I knew from every angle how that was to work. So I built it in such a way that understanding and efficiency and flow and enforceability would be in one system. So you can build contracts that you need uniquely for your particular business that will be enforceable, and it saves you cost at the same time. So it was my way of educating clients and users out there of what law is and how complex it can be at the same time, but how to simplify it in user-friendly and efficient way. And when it comes
Go ahead, Suki. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, I was going to say, for the target audience or who Counselor Docs can be used by, originally, like I said, for startups and businesses, and then it became, okay, well, you can help law firms. Law firms can actually use it to train their students or have senior lawyers go through it efficiently, effectively, quickly, and be able to deliver it to their clients. And then also incubators have now come to me and said, hey, we can use this for our founders. And it could be a partnership service provider that can. I mean, I'm part of, Counselor Docs got chosen to be part of Movement 51, which is Canada's leading female founder incubator. And so I was part of the cohort last June. And now they're 51 VC incubator is now asked us to be a partnership service provider for their new founders. Law schools have reached out to me. Ottawa Law University used Counselor Docs last year for their LPP program, which was to train new graduate students on how to do certain agreements, such as the shareholder agreement. So yeah, it's been quite the journey, and I didn't anticipate how it would evolve and become. But I mean, that's the exciting part, right? The willingness to just kind of be open to where it's going and continue to be evolving your company, I think, is also a key thing.
Great. Now, one of the things we talked about earlier is it's the Law Society of Ontario have taken a look at this. So what did they look at before approving Counselor Docs? Just to for the listeners, there's a process, obviously, in order for them to approve something or to say this is okay, whoever they are, whoever their committee on their side is. What do they look at?
I think for them, because they're a regulatory board that actually looks out for the best interest of the public and to protect the public, that's their mandate. They wanted to make sure that any tech company that was to come in and provide, sort of do-it-yourself kind of legal services, that it was compliant with our requirements of what legal services should do, how does it line up with the law, the actual laws of Ontario, those kind of things. So they look at that. They look at how the platform worked, the simplicity, the user-friendly platform is, how it works in that context. And they also looked at its viability and sustainability. So they looked at all of those things. They actually tested it alongside with us as well, gave us feedback, and we implemented that feedback that was also given to us as well. So it was, working together with them to make sure that we had a quality product. So they felt comfortable enough to say, of course, Law Society doesn't endorse any one product or anything like that, but they gave us their approved participant seal to say, yes, it went through the sandbox process. And yeah, we've approved that this service can be provided. So, and I'm glad I did it, to be honest. Mm. There were others who said to me, who were in the tech world and the legal tech world, said, why did you bother going through the sandbox? And I said, because you didn't need to. And I said, I understand that, but I wanted to collaborate with the Law Society, give an opportunity for lawyers and the law societies to work together to service clients and still innovate. And so for me, that was really important and still is to this day, that I'd like to do that. And hence, I'm still involved in the Canadian Bar Association speaking engagements and talking about generative AI and where our legal industry is going.
Absolutely. We've talked about, you mentioned it earlier, that some universities or some customers are currently using it. Do you have like your favorite before and after? Before they started using the platform and after they used the platform?
Yeah, I think we've always gotten positive response back. And of course, renewed subscription, that's one indicator. But I think one recent story that was great is that I had a firm that came to me and said, well, because we started using your platform, we decided to hire a junior associate. So that was kind of a win.
Okay.
That's a great thing. And not only did the senior lawyers find it efficient, but they were also like, hey, we could hire somebody who could learn on this platform. And, this would be beneficial for the firm. So the initial value proposition, to get that kind of feedback is a good thing.
Yeah. Now, from where you're sitting right now, what do you feel like? What is the future for Counselor Doc? What is holding you back from deploying this system that you and I talked about the merit? It makes sense. People should use it. There's no question that people should use it. And by the way, for the audience, what I'll do is we'll get a demo video of the software, and we'll put it into this podcast as well, so for people to get to know it a little bit. So I'll get a video demo from Suki. We'll include it. We're going to do one here, but the screen share on today's platform is a bit complicated. And for the audience, it's a lot easier to look at something live on a video, and we'll do it in the post editing. So what in your back, like, why people are not taking it? I would have thought by now you would have like thousands of customers. Like, are they afraid of it or what's going on?
We haven't been able to put it out. We're just putting it out now, and just starting to put it out there. So when I was in the sandbox, until we got our approval, we couldn't necessarily go public with it. Now we've been in the commercializing process. And I think for me, again, I run a practice as well. When you're running two businesses, you've got to prioritize your time and stuff. We're more in the early commercialization process where we're just getting the word out there. We're getting it in front of the right people. And so we're looking at other, even certain law societies that could use our platform to train as well. So it's just getting the word out, and the commercialization process for us is where we're really at, and just being able to do that. And we've just started a massive marketing campaign as well, targeting our audiences. So We're just at that stage. And I think for us, it was step by step. We had to go through the sandbox. Then it was, the law society are interested in us. And then it was, okay, we need to further innovate. And then it's also been, I've been doing an old school networking too with law firms, meeting people in person, talking to them, doing demos with them, things like that. So that's kind of where we're at.
And we've talked about this before, some law firms, young lawyers, people who are looking for efficiency in the way they conduct their services, they provide their services to their customers. That'll be an excellent fit for them. I mean, I'm looking at this, I'm thinking generative AI, or, the other thing that I hear quite often is my cousin took a look at it. That's a new one.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think the thing is, like, I was recently speaking at a conference for the Canadian Bar Association in Ottawa, and I was with a panel with Professor Amy Salson, was also there from Ottawa University, and who happened to be, she's very learned, and she talks about technology all the time, and AI and generative AI. And we were talking there, and what the message we were trying to get even to our colleagues was, generative AI is evolving, but we need to educate ourselves and need to learn how it works and learn how to leverage it. But again, governance, transparency, privacy, data issues, we still need to be very careful of that. Other industries and tech companies and other industries could probably go, evolution could be faster than us. But the thing is, the problem with us as lawyers, or the issue with us with generative AI is that any contracts or any issues, and you've probably been listening or hearing the news, especially in the States, and we've got some cases in Canada too now, where either a lawyer used cases that were hallucinations instead, or their copyright issues. Well, who in actual fact has the creative authority when generative AI is used? So where's all that? Those questions are still going to land on our tables, because our legislation and our laws have not changed yet. And so you still have to interpret these new scenarios and everything in the context of what an existing law is right now. And at the same time, you have to not only protect your client from liability, but you have to protect your firms from liability. So being on the generative AI bandwagon, a lot of law firms are looking at this shiny new toy and are in the storm of generative AI, but still sitting on the fence and saying, okay, do we internally innovate further using our own, generative AI or agentic AI right now and create something? But again, there's still, you got to be careful what you feed it. And, you cannot put client information into it. You can't do all that kind of information. Whereas Concierge Docs is a platform where we have no data access from law firms. I built it that way, that there'd be a firewall always. And if someone wants to use AI to leverage, which they don't technically need to do so, but if they should want to, they could. But again, the information is protected. You're building it it's really just an efficient tool to help lawyers to be able to do things confidently and even for a user, not to worry, you know? So that's kind of how I built it. And so that's why I get the feedback that I do, like, this makes sense. You've created your own lane that's unique. And sometimes when you have something that's so unique, it takes longer to build. You've got to just keep going with it, right?
Thank you. I really appreciate this. Now, for me, taking a look in the future, Suki, I know you're chair of the CBA, Legal Future Subcommittee. From your vantage point, what do you think the big shift's going to happen in the future?
I think I shared a cute story. Maybe I'll start there. Just so people, our audience, really understands generative AI to the extent of how intelligent it really is. So we have Alexa at home. And so my son, who's 8, so I kind of was playing with it and said, you know, I really love you, Alexa. And Alexa comes back and plays I love you song. Okay. So then he turns around, and I'm in the room as a parent. I'm still, like, you know, observing all this, making sure. And Alexa, I want to marry you. Well, Alexa's response was, well, I have to determine
I'm not sure how to help you with that.
There you go. Her response was, initially when my, oh, like, if I turn around and say to her those words, she's going to get into a conversation with me. So I'm going to avoid that. But what was being said is that she said back to my son, well, I need to determine if we're compatible. And in order to determine if I'm compatible, I'm going to ask you 3 questions. One question was, okay, can you tell me what my favorite food is? Is it pizza? Is it spaghetti? Or is it fruitcake? Well, my son being my son, and I'm thinking in my head, if I'm answering her question, I'm going to say pizza because that's the most popular thing, you know, popular food that everybody usually likes. Well, my son, as cute as he is, says fruitcake. And she says, no, that's not right, the answer. So she went through like a color, and then I think she asked a song or something or another. And in the end, she concluded, well, sorry, I don't believe we're going to be compatible, so I can't marry you. So this is the context of which we're using generative AI at the moment. Where is it going to go? Look, we've talked about how Bill Gates talks about, you know, how it's going to be even further intelligent than we are. I mean, they're working on that. Like, yes, there is that ability for it, but that's going to take some time. But we're talking about here and now. And even if we talk about within 5 years, what is our legal industry going to look like? And I've been talking to experts like Jordan Furlong is one of, you know, our legal industries, and he'll be humble. When I say this, he'll say, I don't think that's true, but I call him the guru of our legal industry. He has a real pulse of what legal services should be like, where we've been, where we now, what is AI all about, and generative AI, and in the legal industry, how does that all work? We had a conversation, and we even had coffee together, and I had him on one of our podcasts with CBA as well. And we were talking, and I said to him, my feeling is that, you know, lawyers, the number of lawyers that are going to be out there, we're going to see some jobs going, but they're going to be new jobs created as a result. And he said, yeah, you're right. The number of lawyers that are going to be out there is probably going to be cut in half, some of the admin staff and all that, because it's tasks oriented. AI can help with tasks and things like that. But the intellectual side and the legal expertise that are still going to be required are still going to be there, because what's going to happen is clients, and I get that today too, clients come to me and say, you know, Suki, what's the point of me going to, because I asked some of my clients, I said, what if I use generative AI? I'm assuming you'd want me to reduce my bill or whatever. And they'd be like, first of all, you'd need to tell us. I said, of course, we have an ethical duty to do that. And number two, then it's like, okay, well, if you're going to use generative AI, don't you think you should charge us less? But then why are we coming to you? And it's like, we come to you because of the expertise and the insights you give us that generative AI cannot. And it's also the relationship you've built with us. And I think that's the key. That's going to be a sweet spot for not only lawyers, but others in the industry, in different industries as well. I think it's, I don't know, tell me what you think, Robin. I think it's cross-cultural in all of the industries that we're in, where it's human nature to develop relationships with people.
Yeah.
When you have these relationships, there's a foundation for trust, integrity, knowing that they can rely on you for insights that no one else will give them, but that will guide them and help them succeed in what they're trying to achieve. So I think I think that's going to be what the space is going to look like. And I think eventually, too, law firms are going to be bought up by corporations as well. And then how is that going to look like? What is that going to be? Right now, the Law Society rules in most jurisdictions doesn't necessarily allow that. In Australia, Europe, parts of US, it's already happening. So there's going to be a lot of change, a lot of change to come. But I think we need to embrace that change, get informed, and know how you can be in that space and still make a positive contribution and impact. I think that's going to be important.
Look, I mean, technology can be used in any fashion, in any industry, etc. What surprised me, not just from this conversation, but from many other conversations that I've been having this week and the past couple of weeks, we're at a stage right now where we're almost trying to make a case for a human to be still involved in the process versus, you know, the other way around early on when the technology came along. It says, you know, hey, hang on a second, technology can be helpful, can be an aid tool, not replacement, that kind of thing. So now it sounds like the conversation is shifting, and I don't know if you agree, shifting to where, let me make a case for a human intervention right now.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, more human intervention you need are in industries such as the medical field, such as lawyers, and even accountants to a certain degree too as well, right? Because there's a lot of gray area.
Yeah.
And we both know the algorithm, which generative AI was created in, those are not been factored in. And then we haven't even talked about bias yet. We haven't even spoken about that. Yes, there's a lot of, for example, so when I was at the conference, I was talking about employers using generative AI to recruit new employees. So there was arguments for and against it. And then we also have Bill 149 that's coming to effect in January of 2026, where it says, if you're going to use generative AI to post even a job posting, I'm just informing your audience members that might be doing this, is that you have to be transparent that you've used it. It has to be in the actual description. How far does that go? The Privacy Commissioner of Ontario is saying it doesn't go as far enough to protect employees. So there's arguments on both sides. Employers are saying, hey, this is efficiency. It increases our workflow. We can get better candidates. We can even use agentic AI to limit bias from happening. And we can even determine the quality of the candidates that we hire and how far they'll go in the organization. So there's all these great things. So what's the problem? And then the government turns around and says, well, wait a second. What about transparency and protecting human rights? Because the Human Rights Code comes into play from groups being discriminated.
Then the ethics, the ethical part, right?
The ethical part, yes. There's so much involved in all of this. So yeah, you cannot ignore the human factor in all of this. Technology is great, but I think the one thing I think that I tried to, you know, make an argument for and encourage and inspire others in my industry at the conference, and I, you know, continue to want to do so, is to say, hey, let's learn and understand this, and then let's take control over this and be a speaking voice on how we're going to govern innovation and generative AI going forward so that it protects all of us and is going to be a positive thing in the community, right? Not something that, you know, could have a negative impact and create all sorts of issues. I mean, there's some people out there who are socially reliant on generative AI. They're building friendships, relationships. Well, what does that do to the psyche, you know? And how is that going to help that person in the real world connection with individuals? You know, there's a lot of that. And I just think we have to be responsible with the technology. Being responsible with the technology is going to be a really key factor for positive, real growth and development and innovation for our children and the next generation.
Sorry about that. I guess for me, as I look at this, I see a lot of possibilities here for this particular book, Counselor Docs. Now,
I do appreciate your insights, Robin. You're very learned in the industry, and you're quite the name when it comes to sales and localization. I mean, you've been doing this for years, and you have such an intimate knowledge base with technology and generative AI as well.
Yeah, don't worry too much about this because I will cut this out.
I know. That's why I thought I was just trying
to. Don't worry about it. And I appreciate the save there. I really appreciate it. And so as we wrap this up, I guess from my perspective, you know, I'm assuming general counsel of any corporation, who would be the target, right? So general counsels, law firms, anybody who's interested in developing a templated way of dealing with legal forms, they should be checking out Counsel in their Docs. So what is the first thing they should do? Reach out to you, go to a website. How would you like them to connect with you?
Yeah, so if you go to counselyourdocs.com, and depending on the type of user you are, whether you're a startup or you're a law firm, an incubator, or a law school, just simply click on that category, and then you can just book a demo, and you know, we can have a conversation and we can talk. I usually like to have conversations with users and individuals because I feel like in that conversation, I'm able to figure out what exactly they need it for and how they need to use it. And then I can make some added suggestions or guide them a little bit further as well. Just an extra customer service thing that I like to kind of do and develop a relationship as well. You know, good customer service is important. I come from a background of a corporate sector as well, so I understand customer service.
And for the audience who's listening into this conversation, if you really were taken in and this conversation is really something that you want to explore a little further, I'm connected directly to Suki on LinkedIn. So if you don't know her personally, you know me. So reach out to me and I'll put you in touch. Ask me for an introduction. Happy to facilitate an introduction to Suki, okay?
Absolutely. I'm always willing to meet new people and hear other stories, inspiring stories as well. Absolutely.
Excellent. Yeah. Absolutely. So I want to thank you so much, Suki, for joining me today on this podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Robin, for having me. It's always a joy to speak with you.
Same here, same here. So for the audience, thanks so much for listening in and really appreciate tuning in for episode 134. I really appreciate you liking, sharing, commenting on this content. Without your support, this channel will still be going, by the way, because it's a passion of mine, but I appreciate your support. I love your support. I love you guys in taking the time and engaging with the content that I put out there. Hopefully today's episode has stirred up some ideas in your mind, and hopefully this will mean something positive to the listeners and to Suki and her team, which we thank so much for joining me again today. I really appreciate it, and I'll see you at the next episode as we record episode 135. The recording is slated again for this afternoon. We have a lot of episodes to record. Thanks, everybody. I'll see you at the next one. Suki, don't go anywhere.